Few diagnoses are more devastating to the patient and to the patient's family than a diagnosis of dementia, or even worse, Alzheimer's dementia. It's one of the most feared diagnoses that a patient can ever hear from a doctor. And I've got a special guest who's going to be joining me today. We're going to be talking about Alzheimer's dementia and other forms of dementia in depth. What you can do about it, what the prescription medications will help and won't help. I've got Amy Berger with me today. She's known on Twitter as Tuit Nutrition. She is a excellent, intelligent, yet common sense voice for diet and the role that it plays in all human health and all human pathology, but most especially dementia. So looks like Amy's with me now. I'm going to go ahead and bring her in. Amy, there you are.
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great. It's good to see you
Great.
again. Too bad it's virtually and not in person.
I know in a normal year we would have seen each other probably two or three times, if not more, every month at some kind of conference.
Yeah, I miss the conferences really bad. Do you agree or disagree?
I do, and it's weird because I'm a huge introvert, so I actually need a lot of quiet time by myself. But there is such a thing as too much quiet time by myself. And those events, that's where we get to see friends that we only see at those events. So people you only see like three or four times a year.
Yeah, I remember the first time Nisha and I ever met you. You were walking down the hall. I can't remember what conference it was. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Amy Berger. She's like, yeah, I think you're right. And we came over and said hi. And you were very nice and cordial. But I could tell we were walking away. I'm like, I think she might be a bit of an introvert. I think we intruded on her bubble.
Well, once I get to know people a little better, then I'm more comfortable. But usually at first it's like,
Yep. Yeah, I'm the same way. Now, folks joining us, watching this, we're going to be talking about dementia and we're going to be talking about all things keto and diet. But we're going to try to focus on dementia, Alzheimer's dementia especially. So if you know someone who has a family member who's been diagnosed with any dementia, please consider sharing this video. You can tag them in the comments, you can share it, you can send an email. You can hopefully they can join us live, but if not, you can share the link and they can watch this on the replay. Tell me in the comments where you're watching us from. Where are you joining us from? What city, what state, what country? I see Scotland's already in the house. That's excellent.
oh, I think I don't have the comments on. I gotta go look at those. There they are.
Okay, you got them. Yeah, there we go. So now Amy wrote the most excellent book I think I've ever read about Alzheimer's dementia. And I've read lots of books about Alzheimer's, lots of journal articles, lots of textbook chapters. And this book really kind of distilled it and broke it down in a way that I don't think anybody ever has. So I had a copy of it. We lost it in the fire. And I've got it. You have an Audible of that, don't you?
There isn't, but there's been a lot of requests. So my publisher told me that if we ever make an audio version, I have to narrate, which is fine, but we have a lot of diagrams and charts that I would have to kind of write out in words before I get to that.
Yeah, you could have a good PDF that accompanied the
That's
Audible.
true.
But yeah, definitely needs to be read in your voice. And you've just recently wrote a new book, you and Eric Westman, Dr. Westman, that we'll talk about later. But first, tell us kind of how you, there it is, the injured part. But now, first, let's start off with you kind of explaining to us why Alzheimer's is so important to you, how you came to for that to be kind of the burr under your saddle that you had to study so deeply and understand so completely.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I have no family history of Alzheimer's or any kind of cognitive decline. I do have family history of type 2 diabetes, stroke, cancer, and obesity. So, we're all stocked up in the family. We didn't need to add Alzheimer's to the mix. But back, I don't know, in 2008 or so, when I was reading Gary Taubes' book, Good Calories, Bad Calories, he has a chapter in there that talks about cancer, dementia, and aging. And he just kind of mentioned, hey, there's some interesting links between diabetes and glucose and insulin and Alzheimer's. And Not having a family history, it wasn't that big a deal to me at the time, but I kind of filed it away in my head, thinking, that's worth looking into sometime in the future. And about 4 years later, I was in graduate school for nutrition and I had to write a thesis. And when I had to pick a topic, I said to myself, what is something that hasn't already been written about a million times? What's something new that I could actually learn about that I would actually care about learning about? And I said, let me go back to that, because I was already eating a low carb diet myself at this time. I said, let me look into that Alzheimer's thing and see, let me look on PubMed. Is there even enough research for me to do a paper on this? And lo and behold, it was everywhere. Some of these papers are 20, 30 years old. And that doesn't sound like a long time ago, but I guess I'm saying this information is not new. It's been in the medical literature for decades at this point. And when I started to look at those connections between blood sugar and insulin and Alzheimer's and the potential therapy that a ketogenic diet could offer, after, so I graduated and I said, I have to put this out into the public. I mean, otherwise, this is a thesis that's sitting on my professor's desk. No one's ever going to see it. So I turned it into a book, and here we are. But I really thought it was potentially life-saving information. And I'm like, no. So now you've got Dale Bredesen, Mary Newport. There's some other people out there writing about it. But at the time, there was nothing. So.
Was your book before Dr. Newport's book?
I think so. Well, so she has two or three books. I think my book was before all of them, but I'm not. She may have, she was probably doing the research at the time, but she hadn't published anything for the public yet.
Gotcha. I'm going to be scattering questions in from the viewers. Somebody asked, how can you tell Alzheimer's dementia from different other dementias? And that's an
So
excellent
that.
question. And it's got a trick answer.
It kind of, well, so it depends on what you mean by trick answer. So Alzheimer's is one form of dementia, right? There's dementia that's the big category, but, and this, I am guessing this is where your mind is going, Dr. Berry. When we talk about Lewy body dementia or frontotemporal dementia or vascular dementia, they're kind of all the same disease. They're the same, now, if you have had a traumatic brain injury or something, or a stroke, that's kind of different because there's a physical reason for what's going on. In a lot of these other cases, it's more of a metabolic internal process. And I think I've actually started looking into Parkinson's disease and multiple sclerosis and ALS, and I am shocked at the commonalities they have at the cellular, like at the mic, the molecular level, they all look really similar. And I,
Absolutely.
my pet theory, now I'm going to be very clear, this is my little pet theory. There's not quite enough research to back this up yet, but it's going in that direction. These are actually all the same disease manifesting differently. So like we all know, and I'm sure most of the people watching know, when you have metabolic syndrome or insulin resistance, some people become obese, some don't. Some people get, the hypertension, some don't. And I think when we have this underlying neurological disturbance, some people will get the tremor, some people will get the Parkinson's, some people will get the motor problems, some people will get the cognitive. They all look so similar. It's terrifying, but it's also fascinating because if they are this either the same disease, that's maybe going too far. If they have a lot of commonalities, then the same treatment should be effective for all of them.
I totally agree. And I also share that theory with you that they're all just different manifestations of the same disease process. And so the trick answer of how can you tell, is this Alzheimer's or is it another form of dementia? To my knowledge, the only way you can definitively tell, the gold standard, is autopsy. And so after the
Well,
patient passed, you do an autopsy and then you can see pathological changes in the brain and you can say, oh, this was Lewy body or this was Alzheimer's or this was vascular or whatever. But to my knowledge, there's still no test while the patient's actually living that you can do, truly differentiate, is this Alzheimer's or another form of dementia? And that's how come I worded the show notes the way I did, because just because your doctor said your loved one has Alzheimer's, That's a best guess. That's an educated guess.
Let's put it.
That's what that is. It could be any number of dozens or hundreds of different kinds of Alzheimer's or of dementia. And I think Amy's dead on. I think all of those types of neurological degenerative diseases are effectively the same disease that manifest in different people in different ways. I really think you're on to something there.
Well, and you know what the worst part of it is, or I don't know if worst, the other trick answer is, how can you differentiate? It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter, at least because in the conventional medical world, there are no effective treatments for any of these. So what does it matter? Whether you have Alzheimer's or you have Lewy body or you have frontotemporal, they have nothing effective for you anyway. So it doesn't matter what you, I mean, I hate to be so blunt about it, but what difference does it make when there's no effective therapy for you anyway?
100% agree. And yes, Udon, this goes for Huntington's as well. I totally think that's in the same basket of diagnoses that are all caused by the same underlying pathology. And Amy, this is Amy Berger. Somebody asked in the comments, who is the woman? Amy Berger, she's a CNS, right?
Yeah.
And she is the author of several books we're going to talk about. One of the things that I learned very early in my medical career, that's when Aricept was really the only drug out there on the market. And I used to prescribe that left and right, you know, and then I had a patient say, well, that doesn't really do anything though, right? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Of course it does. It's FDA approved. And they said, no, I've read somewhere that all it does is maybe slow it down a little. And I'm like, don't be ridiculous. We wouldn't be wasting our time if that's what it did. And so later that night, like any good doctor who didn't know what the hell he was talking about, I Googled it and started doing some reading, and I'm like, holy crap. Yeah. Literally, Aricept, Namenda, all of them are FDA approved for the following thing. They might slow down the progression of dementia a little bit. There is no FDA approved medication that even claims cure or claims to stop the progression. There is no medication on the market. So if you're listening to this right now saying, well, my doctor said, yeah, honey, I used to say that too back before I knew better. Don't just blindly believe your doctor. Go and look it up. Look what their actual claim to fame is. And it is only that they slow down the progression a tiny bit, perhaps. That's literally.
The best case scenario is that you get worse more slowly.
That's right. So the medications, obviously, I mean, yeah, of course, if I had, you know, if Nisha's dad were diagnosed with Alzheimer's, we'd probably put him on the medication. Why wouldn't you? If it's going to slow it down a little while we're doing everything else, that might also have a meaningful benefit, right? Someone asked about aluminum in your research on Alzheimer's, because, you know, there for a while it was popular to say that maybe aluminum and cookery and stuff like that contributed. What did you find or not find on that topic of aluminum?
Yeah, I think there's a lot less on that than people think there is. I think there is some if you truly have heavy metal toxicity from like a workplace exposure, if you're a welder, if you're a beautician that's inhaling noxious chemicals all day, you might have some issue like that. For the average person, I think that's a very, very rare cause of cognitive issues.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we tend in the Berry household, we tend to avoid any aluminum around hot food just to make sure, right? But probably that's a very minor cause, if at all. Somebody said in the comments that Aricept gave her uncle horrible nightmares. And that's another thing that every healthcare provider's got to take into consideration, is that this drug is going to slow down the progression a tiny bit, perhaps, so that you will progress less quickly. But there's also a 2-page list of potential side effects that you also have. And these can be depression. They can be anxiety. They can be nightmares. They can be all kinds of mental status changes in someone who already has dementia. And so many people, it feels like they're between a rock and a hard place. Like, I don't know what to do. If he takes it, he has nightmares. If he doesn't take it, he's just going to die of Alzheimer's. I don't know what to do. So let's talk about what you found in your research that actually does slow down progression and actually does really put the brakes on the progression of Alzheimer's.
So, yeah, I always want to be really careful about not overpromising. I think the research is in its early days. There's a ton more research to be done, but compared to the fact that there's no effective treatment, what I'm going to talk about now, I think, is the most encouraging, most promising road we have right now. And so if anyone's wondering what the heck is a low-carb keto nutritionist even looking at Alzheimer's for, they regularly call Alzheimer's disease type 3 diabetes, or sometimes you'll hear diabetes of the brain. Yep. And the major issue with Alzheimer's disease, it's not a crossword puzzle deficiency. Don't let anyone tell you, you just let your brain get lazy. You should have learned a foreign language. Not that there's anything wrong with doing that. That's not going to prevent Alzheimer's. So the major malfunction in the brain of somebody with this condition is that the brain is no longer metabolizing glucose properly. So it's not getting enough energy. The brain is basically starving. And if the brain is starving, of course you're going to have memory problems. Of course your behavior is going to change and your personality is going to change. So the single most exciting thing about this whole situation is that even though the brain is not breaking down glucose to get fuel properly, an Alzheimer's brain can still take up and use ketones. And they've proven this not just in rats and mice and not just in petri dishes, in actual humans with this condition. And people vary in their response. Like if you give them MCT oil or put them on a ketogenic diet or give them the exogenous ketones, not everybody magically has better cognition. But for the most part, people do show a little bit of improvement. And any amount of improvement can almost be considered a miracle in this situation where there's nothing else that works.
Yep, I totally agree. And so there's two ways to really get ketones in the human body. You can either eat a high fat or at least a low carbohydrate diet, and you're going to be in some degree of ketosis. And then there's the exogenous ketones that are both sold commercially by multi-level marketing companies, and also there's therapeutic quality exogenous ketones that are used in research. And absolutely, this is one of the few cases, because you may know, I don't really recommend exogenous ketones.
Same.
Especially if your goal is weight loss and, you know, no, you just need to eat keto, get in ketosis and do it yourself. But for somebody who has dementia, I don't think there's anything wrong with using a good quality exogenous ketone to help feed their brain, because basically the glucose, as they get older, the glucose can cross the blood-brain barrier. But the insulin has trouble as they get older. And so they wind up with neurons, brain cells, that are literally starving. They can't get the energy they need. But those neurons can use ketone bodies or ketones, right? And so I've had several patients in the clinic before the fire who had, well, you could call it, like you said, if it helps even a little bit, that's better than the prescription. You can call that a miracle. And I mean, the slowing of their dementia and the improvement that they noticed was striking. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I think at that point I was sold.
Yeah. I'm in the same camp as you. I mean, generally I don't recommend the ketones, but this is a very specific situation. Right. And the thing is, like, the hardest job in Alzheimer's is the caregiver, right? It's that person, the biggest burden is on that person. It's hard enough to be the caregiver, let alone you're trying to force this person. They've been eating bread every day their whole life. They've been eating cereal. Now, all of a sudden, for breakfast, you want to give them eggs cooked in coconut oil, and they're belligerent that, where's my muffin? The nice thing about the exogenous ketones in this case is that it will feed the brain even when they're still eating a high carb diet. But I think you and I probably agree that to the extent that the problem is actually being caused by a metabolic syndrome or like a pseudo diabetes type state, the exogenous ketones will provide that fuel temporarily, but they do nothing to actually fix the problem. For that, you need the diet or you need other lifestyle changes to actually address the root cause, or what we would think is the root cause.
Yep. So if someone, let's say someone's listening and they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and they have a first degree family history of Alzheimer's, their mom or dad had or has Alzheimer's, what recommendations would you make for them hey, this is what you need to start doing in the morning if you'd like to decrease your risk of developing this, or at least developing a severe case of this. What would you recommend?
Yeah, so I'm going to stick a pin in the morning thing for a second, but I'm so glad you mentioned the younger ages, because this is something people really need to know. This is not a disease of elderly people. Remember, the whole problem in this disease is that the brain is not using glucose properly. They can measure your brain's glucose uptake and use with a PET scan, and they can see that that decline in the fuel happens in people as young as their 30s and 40s. So this disease process starts when you are young and healthy and you don't know what's going on because you're compensating. It's only when this problem gets to be so bad that the brain is no longer compensating, that's when you start showing the memory loss and the problems. But that the symptoms are like a late stage. They're like the last domino to fall. So when you're young, specifically in the morning, I would say the last thing you want to do is skyrocket your blood sugar and insulin first thing in the morning with that giant glass of orange juice and that bowl of healthy whole grain cereal and that fat-free bran muffin, just like I used to do in my former life, right? I thought I was eating healthy. But I will be clear, people will ask me, you know, do I need a ketogenic diet to prevent Alzheimer's? And we don't even know that we can prevent it. I think we would like to think we can, but we don't know for sure. But no, I think not everybody needs keto. What we all do have to do is eat in such a way that keeps blood sugar and insulin in a healthy range. Some people are going to need super low carb to do that. Some people will be able to have a little more.
Right. I totally agree. And I think a great analogy is if you compared it to diabetes, type 2 diabetes, because Alzheimer's is effectively type 3 diabetes of the brain. So for somebody who's diagnosed with type 2 diabetes at 55 years of age, right? Did that just magically develop earlier that morning? No. They've been moving in that direction for decades, probably the average person, right? They started out with hyperinsulinemia, but they were able to keep their blood sugars under control. Then the blood sugar, they couldn't control it, and they started developing pre-diabetes. And this is years and years of a process, maybe two decades that they were pre-diabetic, then pre-diabetic, and now they're diagnosed with type 2 diabetic. And that's what everybody needs to understand about Alzheimer's. We all think about old people when we say that word. But it starts in your 20s and in your 30s, maybe even younger, but definitely in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. That's when the process, the metabolic disease actually really gets started in earnest. And that's when the damage starts to be done. Only when enough damage is done to enough neurons do you start to actually see the symptoms expressed outwardly.
Yeah. And the, you know, chronically high insulin is a major risk factor for Alzheimer's, regardless of your family history, regardless of your genetics. Chronically high insulin and type 2 diabetes are huge risk factors. And the interesting thing is, though, and this is like almost my question for you in your medical expertise, at least with type 2 diabetes or even fatty liver, when you go on a ketogenic diet or a carnivore diet, you can reverse these things within days or weeks, it's gone. The brain doesn't seem to heal that quick. Like with Alzheimer's, is we don't see that kind of impact in that time.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that, probably not all of it, but a big part of it is the how slowly neurons are there, how slowly they're replaced in the brain. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the average cell in your liver or in your pancreas, they're replaced every few weeks or every few months with a brand new cell. But the neurons in your brain, some of those you've had since you were, you know, 10 years probably, and they're replaced very, very slowly by the very few stem cells in the brain. And so when you have damage to a cell that's very seldom replaced, then that damage is going to add up because you keep getting more and more damaged cells. I don't think that's the full story, but I think that's a big chunk of the story, is that the brain, it's kind of stuck with the damage you did. Whereas if you cut your leg a month from now, you've got maybe it's a tiny scar, because the cells were able to make new cells and just fix it. But we don't have that in the brain. And you can see that mimicked in a spinal cord injury, right? And you broke your leg. Oh, it's healed in 6 weeks. You broke your neck. No, I'm sorry, you're in a wheelchair for life currently because we can't fix that. And it takes the neurons too long to reconnect. And I think that's echoed in the Alzheimer's, because when you do take somebody from a standard American junk diet and you move them to a very good whole food ketogenic diet, everything else in their pathology starts to get better. Their A1C, their fatty liver, their obesity, everything starts to get better. And you'll notice an improvement in the Alzheimer's or whatever dementia they have, but it's not going to be as fast and it's not going to be as complete as the below the neck changes that you see when you convert them to a ketogenic diet. And that's why it's imperative that if you have a family history of dementia, you need to start right now in the morning. You need to start with a real whole one ingredient, real ketogenic diet of some variety. It can be Mediterranean keto. It can be carnivore. It can be ovo-lacto-pescatarian. I don't care, but you need some source of good animal protein and fat. And if you want some veg, throw it in there, but you got to stop the grains and the sugars, because that's what's actually literally causing the damage that eventually built into the disease.
Yeah. You know, it's funny how those of us who know, there's no part of the body that is not affected by chronically high blood sugar or insulin. Why do we think the brain's immune to that? Like the blood-brain barrier, that just protects it against everything else that's going wrong in the rest of the body. And it's like crazy that it's not, they don't even consider, and by they, I don't know who I mean, the medical community at large, the nutrition community at large, they don't even consider the possibility that Alzheimer's could be every bit a diet and lifestyle disease, just like type 2 diabetes or obesity or PCOS or hypertension, you know? And yeah, it's totally almost like so and complex, they can't even entertain the possibility that it's diet and lifestyle.
And yeah, absolutely. And you know, they'll all give lip service to diet and lifestyle. Well, you need to, you know, but then when it comes down to the specifics, you're like, okay, doc, I need to change my diet. What do I need to change? You wind up getting a handout about a plant-based diet or about whole grains and lots of fruits and vegetables, right? Uh-huh. And so many people don't understand, Amy, that when you stop eating your bowl of Lucky Charms and drinking your glass of chocolate milk for breakfast, right? You stop that because you know that's bad for you. And then you start eating two whole wheat bagels and a glass of organic fresh squeezed orange juice. You think you're doing better because that's what we're taught, right? But in reality, when you look at the carbohydrate, when you look at the sugars in both breakfasts, it may be a little less bad. But really, you haven't changed anything when it comes to brain health.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about the diet. In your research, did you find any specific foods we need to focus on trying to include? Because I know Dr. Mary Newport, she really is a big believer in coconut oil, which is a great source of fat. Did you find any research or any avenues that you're like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe that food's really important for brain health.
There's not one specific food, except that like with coconut oil or MCT oil, those are more readily converted into ketones. So again, even in somebody that's not willing or able to do a low carb or ketogenic diet, we can get them some ketones at least by giving them those oils. I mean, she started by giving her husband coconut oil on his oatmeal. Mm-hmm. Like he was not doing a ketogenic diet, and just from the coconut oil, she noticed enough of a difference. But I think, you know, like when it comes to Alzheimer's, especially, everybody's obsessed with blueberry extract and green tea extract and curcumin and resveratrol. And I think some of these compounds given at like a pharmacological dose, right, a super concentrated dose, yeah, they might have some effect. But yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it has a lot more to do with what you're not eating, like all the sugar, all the garbage, whatever you can eat that keeps that metabolic health in a good place. And I think, you know, you've probably heard of Dr. Dale Bredesen. I think there's a lot of people that have skewed copper and zinc ratios. And of course, I think zinc is going to be more available in the animal foods and shellfish. I think there is a lot of probably subacute anemia, especially in women. And I think that can affect brain health. So I think just a lot of these killer nutrients, killer in a good way, that we get from things like red meat and shellfish and even from some of the vegetables, you know, for those of us that still want to eat vegetables, I think it has so much nutrition research about things like the blueberry extract and the curcumin is meant to undo damage, right? This acts against this and da da da. If you're not inflicting all that damage in the first place, you don't have to undo it. So I think it has a lot more to do with what you don't eat than what you eat. And assuming your diet gives you the nutrients that you need as a general baseline.
Totally agree. And you know, it really annoys me when you see the supplements out there, because they're kind of preying on these family members who are scared to death because dad's got dementia. And, you know, they've got this Aussie berry or this root from Australia or this berry picked by monks in the Himalayas. And it's like, come on. And I always look into every single one. I'm like, maybe, right? And I look into it and I'm like, this is bullshit. Why Wow. are you even pretending that you think this is going to help? There's not a shred of research, and not only research, but there's no physiological pathway where, like, that's what Amy and I are talking about. We're talking about just bedrock physiological human pathways, Yeah. how human physiology works. That's what we're talking about. But if you're going to come up with some stupid berry from the swamps of whatever, that's just, you're just trying to bilk people out of their money, and it's really disappointing.
Yeah, I think, and when people are using, you know, some people come to me and the list of supplements is 20 things long. That stuff isn't hurting anybody, but it's not helping. It's just, at best, your wallet is lighter. At best, you've enriched some company, you know? It's
yeah.
not
you
helping.
You have 4 ounces in your wallet, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I totally agree. What about alcohol? There was I saw on web, I think it was WebMD today, had a new article that moderate alcohol intake can protect the human brain from dementia. And of course, it was based on a prospective cohort, right? Epidemiological. It was actually an old study done years ago, and they went and looked at all the data and crunched the numbers, and I think they broke them up into quartiles of abstainers and one drink a day, two drinks a day or more. And they found that the moderate drinkers had better preserved cognitive function. Did you find anything that seems to support that in your research to write the Alzheimer's antidote?
I have to admit, I have not looked into the alcohol issue, except that, epidemiology is such a minefield, and especially when it comes to alcohol, there's the healthy user bias, right? If you drink a glass of red wine once or twice a week, you probably already have a refined kind of healthy lifestyle. You eat well, you have the money to afford a gym, maybe to afford good medical care. So is it the wine or is it everything else? Because what type of alcohol are we talking about? A nice expensive Chianti, or are we talking about a 40 of gin? Like, those things are probably associated with different health outcomes. And I'm a wine lover, so I don't like to tell people not to drink. I'm kind of in Ted Naiman's camp in that alcohol is a toxin. I don't drink it because it's a health food. I drink it because I enjoy it. It helps me unwind. I'm a little uptight sometimes. Alcohol quiets the voices in my head. I don't have any illusions that it's a health food. And I think the occasional drink is fine, but taken to the extreme, it can cause dementia. There is something called alcoholic dementia, and it has to do with depletion of B vitamins, I think especially B1, thiamine. So you can actually have like a very long-term chronic alcohol abuse-induced dementia. You're not going to get this from the occasional glass of wine or the occasional party. This is a really, you know, alcohol abuse situation problem. But that's the really long answer to saying, I wish that I could say that alcohol is good for the brain. I think the occasional drink every now and then is fine, but it's not a health food. I wish it was. Did our connection freeze? Oh no. Oh no. Hello? I can see the comments. Can you all see me? Because I can see the comments rolling by. But yeah, Dr. Barry's frozen. Oh, you can all see me. Well, why don't we just chat amongst ourselves? Isn't Dr. Barry awesome? This is like one of the few shows where I can really just be like, tell you like it is. I hope he rejoins. Let's all hopefully he'll just come right back in. Well, I'll just chit chat. I saw some people from North Carolina in the chat. I'm actually in Durham, so I'm coming to you from near South Point Mall in Durham, North Carolina. Feel free to ask some questions in the meantime if you want. I mean, if there are questions for me, I'm taking over the Dr. Barry live stream. Oh no. Wait, I see some genetic. How do ketones help memory? Loving the new book. Oh, thank you for getting the new book. Oh, talk more about coconut oil. So yeah, I guess I'll talk about coconut oil and the ketones since that it seems like that's what people are really asking about. Oh, trisomy 21. Yeah, real quick, trisomy 21 is Down syndrome. They are at greater risk for Alzheimer's, and it has to do with the buildup of amyloid. Not everyone with Down will develop Alzheimer's, but they are at greater risk. So, with regard to the ketones, again, the whole point of providing ketones for the brain is that at least in Alzheimer's disease, the brain is not metabolizing glucose. So it's like a fuel shortage. The brain is starving. So can we get some other fuel into the brain? And the research shows that the ketones can. And when you eat coconut oil or MCT oil, those kind of fats are converted into ketones, even if you're not on a ketogenic diet. So that's why even if somebody doesn't want to cut their carbs, but they have memory problems, those oils or the exogenous ketones might help a little bit. I've seen a lot of questions talk about my books. Somebody asked if I fast. I do not fast deliberately, but I don't eat like all day long. I eat when I'm hungry, so it's basically two pretty substantial meals a day, but I don't watch the clock. I don't say, oh, I'm not allowed to eat until it's 2 o'clock. I don't really do any of that. Magnesium. I'm just looking at the questions. Low B vitamins connected with Alzheimer's. Good question. Vitamin B12, yes. Their vitamin B12 deficiency, I think, is very unrecognized. It's underdiagnosed, meaning a lot more people have it than is realized. And part of that is because the quote-unquote normal range for B12 is too wide. So you'll be told your B12 is normal when it's at, I don't remember what the exact range is, 200 or 300 picograms per milliliter or whatever it is, when you really want to be at the mid-range or higher because that range is just too wide. And if you're at the bottom of the normal range, it's just too low. So yeah, a B12 deficiency all by itself, regardless of any of this glucose and insulin diabetes stuff we've been talking about, the B12 deficiency alone can cause not only something that resembles Alzheimer's, it can cause B12 deficiency has been mistakenly diagnosed as multiple sclerosis. It can cause tremor, so it can look like another neurological disorder when it's actually a B12 deficiency. So yes, that can happen. What else is here? Are there any supplements I recommend for people already following keto? Not unless you know you specifically either have a deficiency or you notice you feel better when you take things. Like I do supplement with magnesium because I tend toward constipation, so I take a little extra magnesium. I take some other stuff as a little insurance policy now and then because it just makes me feel better, but I don't think there's a whole lot of supplements that are required beyond good food. I hope Dr. Barry comes on soon. Otherwise, I'm just gonna Did he text me? Let me see if he texted me or got me on Twitter or something. You would think he could just come right back into his own link, right? And maybe his internet went out or something. No, I don't see anything. Well, anyway, hopefully some of you know who I am and it's not just this like random person talking to you. Somebody asked if statins. Oh my God, so many good questions here. Where do I even start? Oh, Alicia says introduce myself. So, all right, if you joined late, Dr. Barry fell off the map a couple of minutes ago. I hope he's able to join soon. I've known Dr. Barry for a few years now. We've met at all the keto and low carb conferences. I am a low carb and ketogenic oriented nutritionist, and I wrote a book about Alzheimer's disease. It's called The Alzheimer's Antidote, and you can find that on Amazon. And my brand new book that just came out 2 days ago is called End Your Carb Confusion, and it's written with Dr. Eric Westman, who I'm sure many of you have heard of. He's one of the guys that's been doing clinical research on keto for a long time. So that's who I am. I have a YouTube channel. It's called Tuit Nutrition, Tuit Nutrition. That's also my handle on Twitter. Okay, so people talking about statins are such a controversial issue. I will say that the FDA itself, the United States Food and Drug Administration, recognizes that memory loss and confusion and cognitive issues are known side effects of statin drugs. And it's probably because the brain is loaded with cholesterol. All the myelin sheaths, every cell membrane, every neuron needs a ton of cholesterol. So if we take a drug that impairs the synthesis of cholesterol, why wouldn't you have a problem with the brain? Now, not everybody does, right? It's not that everybody has this, but the US FDA website states very clearly that cognitive issues are known side effects of these drugs. So if somebody has been on a statin for a long time, it's not unreasonable that that may be a contributing factor. And I'm not a doctor, so I didn't use the word cause. I say it may be a contributing factor. Can diet reverse or help Alzheimer's? It's hard to say. Like I was saying to Dr. Barry earlier, I really try to be very careful with my language and not overpromise. We have seen some reversals of mild cognitive problems, not somebody in a very late severe stage of Alzheimer's disease or dementia. Somebody that's just kind of on the process. It has been known, there are some diagnostic tests that are used in the, in the neurology world that we have seen people's scores improve, either going from MCI, from mild cognitive impairment to a normal score with a ketogenic diet and some intermittent fasting. So I feel comfortable saying that it can be improved at least in the early stages. What about hair loss on carnivore? Yeah, we can answer some carnivore questions. I am carnivore friendly. I'm not opposed to the carnivore diet. So hair loss can happen on any diet, whether carnivore, keto, or vegetarian, vegan, or any diet. Anytime your body goes through a shock or a very stressful period. And we might not think of a carnivore diet or a keto diet as stressful, but internally, because it's such a shift, the body, it's such a radical change, you can lose hair because of that. And a lot of times it happens with hormonal shifts. Women sometimes after giving birth will lose a lot of hair after menopause. The good news about keto and carnivore is that if you do lose a lot of hair, eventually, not only does it start growing back, it tends to grow back better, like stronger, longer, healthier. So it maybe somebody wants to write this out. It's called telogen effluvium. It's actually a medical term for stress-induced hair loss. Very, very two words, telogen effluvium. Statins. I'm just going through the questions here. I feel like it's I'm just taking over Dr. Barry's channel. Toxic exposure. Hair fell out and grew back. Yeah, Nick says The hair grew back. I'm just looking through the chat here. Well, why don't I, if you guys don't mind, I would like to introduce you to the new book. It's called End Your Carb Confusion. It's available now, and you can get it on Amazon. And it's the title says it all, End Your Carb Confusion. This is the book that I would want if I was new to low carb and keto. I've been eating a low carb diet for over 15 years, sometimes strict keto, sometimes not, but always some level of reduced carbs. And when I started, it was easy to start because literally when I started, Facebook didn't exist. Reddit, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter didn't even exist. There was the Atkins book. There was a book called Protein Power by a very, very famous doctor couple, Dr. Mike and Mary Dann Eads. And there was like one message board, an old school online message board for those of you that are old enough to remember the message boards. And you just followed the plan and it was great. And now, because keto and carnivore and everything has become so popular, it's so great that this has become so popular and it's reaching so many more people. But you hear so many different things, right? Everybody is saying something different. This person says 80% fat. This person says don't eat too much fat. This person says eat more protein. This person don't eat too much protein. What should I do? Fat bombs, macros. I don't even know where I would start if I was new. So this is like the very basic, simple guide as to why and how low carb and ketogenic diets work, who should use them, what they're for, a lot of troubleshooting, how to get the results you want. And this might be a little bit heretical in this, Dr. Berry's very carnivore-centric optimal human diet type of group, but something that we introduce in this book that a lot of other keto and low carb nutrition books don't is how to gradually increase your carb intake if you get to a point where you want to, right? Because keto is extremely healthy, extremely therapeutic. That doesn't mean that you need to be on a strict ketogenic diet for your entire life. Let's say you have a great farmer's market near you, and in July, you just want to have a peach every now and then. Or you know what? At Thanksgiving, you do want to have the piece of pumpkin pie. Is that going to kill you? Is there room for that in your diet? And if so, how do you do it? And so we walk you through how to do that. And I think this is a really good book to give to the person in your life who's a total beginner, who doesn't want to hear about macros and autophagy and mTOR and this gluconeogenic. What? This is the book that is plain English, and I know because I wrote it. You don't need a dictionary next to you to understand this book. And I also think that this book is helpful for people that have been doing a low carb or ketogenic diet for a while and have become so overwhelmed and confused by all the different messages out there. And the other thing that I think is important about our book is everybody's so focused on blood sugar and weight, right? So there's a millions of people out there who are at a quote, quote, normal weight. I always use air quotes when I talk about normal weight, because what is a normal weight? But so people that don't have a weight problem and people whose blood sugar is normal, their fasting glucose is normal or their A1C is normal. So the doctor says, you're fine, see you in 6 months. And so you're fine. But how come you have migraines all the time? How come you're hungry all the time? How come you have skin tags? How come you eat and 3 hours later you're starving? How come you have PCOS? How come your periods are irregular? How come you have high blood pressure that no one can explain? All of these things can be connected to chronically high insulin, even when your blood sugar is normal and even if you're not overweight. And I think that is something that message cannot get out there enough, because there are literally millions of people living with that. And because the doctors don't test for insulin, they have no clue about this. So you're just dismissed. See you in 6 months, see you next year. And nobody can explain why you have this long list of bothersome issues. It might be the insulin. I can't, but where's the, I'm gonna see. I don't see anything from Dr. Barry. There's no, we're friends on Twitter. There's no message from him. I wonder if his internet is just totally out and that's why he's not able to come back in. I'll go till the hour, I guess. We can just chit chat till 7, right? Or 7 p.m. Eastern anyway. Let me look at some of the other Eat Like a Savage. Let's see what else there. Just looking at what else is here. Well, thank you to everyone who said they're going to check the book out. I appreciate that. Again, it's called End Your Carb Confusion. You can get it on Amazon or, local small bookstores are really struggling right now, like any small business with the virus situation. If you can talk to your local store and get them to carry this and tell them you'll buy it, what else do I see here? I'm just going through to see if I have any questions in here. I see a lot of phone numbers. I don't know. Somebody's cavelling for me in Connecticut. I love that word, Tracy Smith. I went to the University of Bridgeport for my nutrition degree. I didn't live there. Bridgeport is not the most savory city in Connecticut, but they have a good nutrition school and it was a distance program, so at least I was able to do that. Oh, Deb Jordan, thank you. People talking about cholesterol. I'm not really sure where to go from here. If you will bear with me for 2 seconds, I'll be right back. No, it's not over there. Oh, here it is. I didn't even have to get up. I actually have another book. It's called The Stall Slayer, and it's about breaking fat loss stalls on a ketogenic diet. And if you get the paperback copy, your copy will not have this gray line. This was my author proof copy. So that's at stallslayer.com. You can either get a paperback on Amazon or you can download a PDF right now, stallslayer.com, and again, about breaking fat loss stalls on a ketogenic diet. So, what else? Any links with ADD, total carbs, but net carbs? Oh my gosh, there's so many. So ADD, yeah, attention deficit disorder. I mean, there is no doubt that food and diet affect the brain and behavior. And anyone who doubts that, oh, I think he's back.
Yeah,
I
wow.
kept going in your absence.
No, it was amazing. I was watching on my phone going, how the hell am I going to fix this?
Oh, you
Because my
were.
laptop completely died. So I was just like, I don't know what to do here, but she's doing great. Let her go.
I'm glad we hung on. I had the Amy Berger hour there for a little
Yeah,
while.
no, that's perfect. 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 So what did I miss? What are we talking about now?
I just was kind of looking at the comments and going through questions. And I
Perfect.
did
Yeah.
talk a bit about the new book, so we kind of covered that a little bit.
Perfect. And do you have a copy of the Alzheimer's Antidote there that you can show people?
Oh, you know what? I just got some. The box is, if I can take 2 seconds and open the
Yeah,
box. All right,
one
I'll be
since
right
it only takes one of us at a time, right? Yeah, friend, she's going to get the book. She'll be right back. I'm actually in the house now because my computer completely crashed, but somehow the StreamYard didn't die, which is awesome, but also weird at the same time. So I'm very happy about that. Don't forget, guys, if you know anybody with any form of dementia in their family, please share this video with them. You literally could change their life. There it is.
Yeah, I was all out. I just got these yesterday, so that's kind of a coincidence.
Yeah. And that's hands down my favorite book about Alzheimer's dementia that I've ever read.
You.
Yeah, it's a really amazing book. So let's take a few more questions here, Amy. We've been going 53 minutes. We'll get a few more questions and then we'll call it a day. If you have a question, you've already typed it, type it in the comments again so that we can see it.
I mean,
Anything more?
there's a lot of questions about someone's asking about total carbs versus net carbs. I mean, there's just a lot of
Yeah.
really general questions.
There's always questions. Always questions. Let's see. I saw, mercury fillings. I saw that question go by several times. Any research you uncovered? Because there's a lot of health gurus out there that tell you to get the mercury out of your mouth, which I don't disagree with. That's probably not a terrible plan. But did you find any research that was kind of a smoking gun with respect to mercury amalgam fillings?
I have not, but I didn't look for it. I really focused on that metabolic aspect. I don't know about the mercury issue, but it wouldn't surprise. Like, I do think there are those legitimate toxicities that I think can affect neurological function.
Yep, totally agree. And so Sarah Christensen says keto and mental health. Yeah, Sarah, that's what we've been talking about. I think that there is no better diet for overall mental health and to protect you against Alzheimer's and other dementias. Now, and so when I say protect, I don't mean you're just ironclad. Here's a guarantee: you're eating keto, you'll never get dementia. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is that your odds of ever contracting the dementia, or basically the metabolic disease, going far enough that you start to have symptoms, is going to be less if you're eating a proper human diet, right? Which is a very low carb diet full of
real food. I'm comfortable saying it reduces risk. Prevent? I don't know. Reduces risk? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, 100%. And then if you do wind up getting it, I don't think it's going to be as severe. If you've been feeding your brain what it needs for years and years. Let's see.
Can we ask you more of a medical question?
Yeah,
came up, and I addressed it delicately. I would rather you address it as a medical professional. Statins and cognitive function.
Yeah, I worry a lot about people taking statins for lowering cholesterol. Cholesterol is a vital molecule for proper brain function. The cell membrane of every neuron in your brain, the cell membrane, right, that wraps it up, is made of cholesterol and lipids and fatty acids. And it makes me very uncomfortable, especially the high dose statins, and especially the new class of drugs that lower cholesterol even more aggressively than statins. That makes me very, very uncomfortable. And there's actually, there was somebody posting on Twitter today about a kind of a meta-analysis looking at all the research. You're going to have a higher chance of cataracts. You're going to have a higher chance of dementia. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a higher chance of low testosterone, impotence. Literally just the list goes on and on and on and on if you're taking especially a high dose statin. And before the clinic fire, if somebody just was scared to death because their cardiologist said you got to have a statin, I would put them on 5 milligrams of Crestor or 10 milligrams of Lipitor. It's like the lowest dose. Break it in half. Take one every other day. And that way you're still taking your statin, but you're not doing what I'm afraid might be irreparable damage.
Yeah. And I did mention, just to sort of cover our tracks, I give that sort of talk about Alzheimer's at a lot of the conferences. I quote directly from the FDA's website where they say memory loss and confusion and cognitive problems are side effects of these drugs. So it's their word. It's not even our word. The FDA knows this.
Yep, I totally agree. Marianne Rogers and a couple of other people have asked about ADD, attention deficit disorder. Would you consider that in the same basket as the dementias and Huntington and ALS and those? Because it's kind of on the other end of the human life. It's kind of in the adolescent and teenage years.
I think I'm not a parent, so I'm speaking out of turn here. And I, not that adults can't have ADD, but it's much more known in children, ADD and ADHD. I don't think it's not the same problem in the brain. Like, frankly, ADD and ADHD is just too much damn sugar. Take the sugar out of the diet and watch that kid be able to sit still and learn. Watch that kid be able to make eye contact and have a conversation. I mean, it's so crass, but I feel like this is the one place where I can just tell it like it is, Dr. Berry, right? It's we're medicating kids that are coked up on sugar. Get them off the sugar and they don't need to medicate.
Yep. I totally agree. And I've got a video. Also, I think autism, who asked that question? Valerie? Yeah, I think autism is in the same basket. Now, do these children have a unique defect somewhere? Yeah, probably. And if you'll watch my autism video on my YouTube channel, there's actually a subset. And as far as we know, it's about 20% of boys with autism. They actually have a defect in the pathway. They can't make carnitine. And so for these boys, and it's not every boy with autism, it's about 20%, but they, if literally the cure for their autism is to feed them meat, which is any meat's a rich source of carnitine, right? And so, but, and so the way they did the research, you can't tell if there's also a cohort of girls or if there's not. All you can know for sure is that 20% of boys with autism, they just have a carnitine deficiency because their pathway's broken. They can't make carnitine. And so anybody with a kid with ADD or autism, 100% put them on keto with lots of fatty meat or carnivore for a month. Try it for 90 days. What's the worst that could happen, right? You literally are not going to harm them in any way with this diet. If it doesn't work worth a damn at the end of 30 days, let them go back to eating their Goldfish crackers and their Lucky Charms, and no harm done. They won't even ever remember that. But why would you not give them that chance with the potential benefit that could come from that?
That's fascinating about the carnitine. I never heard that before.
Yeah. And I've got a link to the research study on my YouTube video about autism. But and you know, autism and ADD is it's much more owned by the parents. Like it is part of their child. And so and it's hard for parents not to get defensive. Like, how dare you say, no, I'm not attacking you. I'm trying to help. But I don't feel like the families of Alzheimer's patients, they don't have that kind of innate defensiveness. They're like, hell, if anything will help at this point, just tell me, what do you think I should try?
Yeah.
Definitely, Amy and I, we're not trying to offend anybody, but I'm just saying, if you have a loved one suffering from these conditions, why not try it for 30, 60, 90 days? What's it going to hurt? Let's see. Let's get one more. Oh, okay. What about intermittent fasting beneficial for the dementias? What do you think about that?
So by itself, probably not. In combination, so what is the main benefit, at least in my opinion, the main benefit of intermittent fasting is that you're going to go some period where your blood sugar is going to be lower and your insulin is going to be lower, which you will accomplish by doing a low carb or ketogenic carnivore diet anyway, whether or not you're fasting. You're probably not going to get quite the same effect if you're eating a normal high carb, whatever diet and intermittent fasting. It's
yeah,
just,
I totally agree.
Yeah, I
agree with you, Amy. But I would say if you're eating low carb and you want to also integrate some intermittent fasting into that, I think it's probably going to make it a little more powerful. Because, well, I mean, many of the ways that a ketogenic diet works is it mimics fasting, right? Because when you're fasting, you're running on ketones because you've already burned through your glycogen. So you are by definition in ketosis if you're fasting for longer than 24 hours. So yeah, 100%, it's going to start to feed their brain because their ketone levels are going to be high enough in their blood that they can actually feed their brain with that. So yeah, but now if you're eating a crap diet and you're like, well, I fast for 8 hours every night when I'm asleep. No, sorry, that's obviously not
going to work. I mean, the fact is, if you're talking about someone with chronic hyperinsulinemia, it might take that insulin 4 or 5 hours just to come back down to normal anyway.
Exactly.
So I just don't see it. I don't see it having a lot of benefit apart from a diet that's already low in carbs.
Yeah, I suspect you're right. Tell us one more time, Amy, where everybody can find you, and one more time about the book, because I just saw a question go by.
Okay, so the new book is End Your Carb Confusion, and that's co-written with Dr. Eric Westman, who I think you're going to talk to next week maybe or some other time soon. The original book is The Alzheimer's Antidote. All of this stuff is on Amazon, and I do have the Stall Slayer, but you can get stallslayer.com. That's about breaking fat loss stalls on keto. And my sort of online handle is Tuit Nutrition, T-U-I-T, Nutrition. That's my YouTube channel. That's my Twitter handle. I do have a blog that nobody reads anymore. My website is it's tuitnutrition.com, but we hit a little snag. You literally have to write www.tuitnutrition. If you just put tuitnutrition.com, it's not coming up right now. So just put the W's in and you'll get there.
That's dumb. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I swear next time I see you, it better be in person because I'm sick of this.
That's
It's always a pleasure and an honor to speak with you. Thank you so much for doing this. And like Amy hinted at, I think that I'm going to be privileged enough to have Dr. Eric Westman do one of these with me next week, and I'm excited about that. Amy, thank you so much for doing this. Been a wealth of information, and thanks for taking over when I disappeared there for a little while.
Thank you. I'm glad we held on. I'm glad you were able to come back in. But yeah, always good to talk. Tell Nisha I said hello.
Will do. Baby Beckett says hi.
All right, good. Take care.
See you later.